on FM, online, and on TuneIn 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM,
where you're listening to The Space Show. Now, many countries have intentions of going to the moon. If humans, yes, man trips to the moon. And the United States is one of the leading leaders in this effort. And the Russians and the Chinese have also announced their intention to set up bases on the moon. So if we're going to go there, we better know a fair bit about the environment of the moon. Well, at Federation Square in Deakin Edge, there was a forum organized by the Moon Village Association on the lunar environment. And there was a chance for the audience to ask questions. So our panel moderator is Evie Kendall, a bioethicist at Deakin School of Medicine. So let's go there to Federation Square and hear what it has. And you will hear Alice Gorman during the course of the conversation.
Okay, hello. I'm Dr. Evie Kendall, and I have the privilege of moderating this panel with a number of experts in the field of environment. I'm going to give the names and the affiliations of each of our experts just first. We have Dr. Yasmina Lazendich-Galloway from Monash University. Now, I'm going to introduce the next speaker in order, so that's Dr. Helen Brand from Australia's Synchrotron. Excellent. Next, Dr. Alice Gorman from Flinders University. Okay, and finally, we have Cara Wiseman from the Office of the Victorian Government Architect. It's great to have such natural synergy between our talks. Of course, how might we build a base on the moon, whether we should, how we can protect what's currently there, and how we can be sustainable. These are all fantastic things to talk about on an environment panel. So while you prepare your questions, I'll give you a second to prepare your wonderful questions. Excellent, good. So we'll start the mic heading in that direction. But just as a very quick one to start, as the prerogative of the chair here, I'm going to ask all four of our speakers to respond your top reason to go to the moon or not go to the moon. Dealer's choice. And whoever wants to talk first can do so.
I have about 30,000, but...
Top one.
Yes. Okay, I'll just say the one that I just made up most recently... is I read somewhere in the papers that an area in Thailand where some movie with Leonardo DiCaprio got made, some beach movie something, got environmentally ruined by tourists going inside the beach with their sunblocks, destroying coral reef, and then, you know, fish went away, then a very rare type of shark went away. Or, you know, the population dropped down. I think it's Thailand or Bali, not sure. If it doesn't have much science in it, I kind of zone out and just read roughly a few things. But then that government of that beach forbidden tourists to go there, and the shark population rise up. And we have this all over. I mean, you probably saw images and videos people put on Bali, how much rubbish is left. You dive through water, and you're actually diving through straws and rubbish the tourists leave behind. So my best reason at the moment, right now, is to basically save Earth from tourists and move them to the moon. But her job is to worry how those tourists won't destroy the moon. Okay. And one of my evil ideas, basically, it's like those things where they trick you to go for a lovely holiday, but you actually go and build houses for people. So we'll trick them to go to the moon, and we actually get them to build stuff. So that's my reason at the moment. But I have a few more.
Excellent. Who'd like to go next?
I guess it's an answer for me, not necessarily an answer for mankind, personkind. As a planetary geologist, I can't think of not going to find out. I just want to know what's there. I just want to see all the rocks. And that may be a simplistic answer, but it doesn't occur to me to think anything else, I don't think.
Curiosity of a scientist.
Yeah.
Excellent. Who wants to go next? Yeah, sure.
I think thinking about this, it's such a great question. I think for me, going back is about the science. And as an archaeologist, I do rocks too. And I want to see those rocks as well, like touch those rocks. So that would be the top reason to go back for me.
The most beautiful rocks I have ever seen were the Apollo thin sections that, so as a part, as the gift to all the countries of the world, the US gave an Apollo rock and I think some thin sections, I think they come as the set. And in the UK, universities can borrow them. So for 1 week a year, my university would have the Apollo thin section rocks. And every single year and every single student would go through and every year you would see those rocks and they were the most beautifully pristine. They were just the most beautiful rocks I've ever seen.
And they're kind of baby Earth because the the surface of the moon is proto-Earth material, so it's a good time capsule.
Okay, you want to weigh in?
I love that I get the challenge of it and the idea of just going and making our mark everywhere because humans think that they're that special. For me, it's about places evolve uniquely with what's there, and they just keep evolving. That's, you know, humans are a mere blip. And I love all that we can sort of dream bigger than that in itself. Beyond that, the realities of it, I think, are really challenging. Yep. But it's about the ethics of how we actually do that, I think, that can kind of start to set that apart, potentially.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback on that because I think I agree with you. It's not about making a mark for me. It's about see what are we capable of in a good way, not a bad way. But also, when you look at human history, we haven't changed. We haven't changed at all. From 100,000 years ago, when we became erected monkey, we didn't change. We still fight in the same way. We still have same urges. We just have different weapons and tools to use. And so there's a concept of space's cognitive extension. Because we are the species that are made by the tools we use, if we go to space, and that could be moon on Mars, our brain will actually start working differently because the tools we're going to use there, environment is a tool. And we know that because when we study tribes at different geographical regions, we see how they actually reason differently. Anthropologists talk about this quite a bit. So to me, if we really want to evolve beyond our primitive monkey selves of fighting and bickering all the time, space is a good place to do that.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. So we will ask our first question.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for a very interesting discussion to start us off for today. I'd actually like to make a comment first on what you said, Yasmina, about the place in Thailand. It's actually called, it's an area that's now known only by its Anglo name, which is James Bond Island. And it's called that because it appeared in a particular James Bond film, and that's what brought all the tourists to it and actually caused all that environmental problems. And leading on from that, you know, we've had a couple of comments about that image of Apollo 8 looking at the Earth and how that created, or didn't create, but was a great stimulus to the environmental movement. But I'd like you all to comment on this, that before the Apollo 8 image, there was another image of the Earth that was taken by one of the Lunar Orbiter spacecraft. So this is a robotic spacecraft, and it took a picture of the Earth, and that was the very first, but it was only black and white. Now, do we somehow contextualise our environment when we see it in colour, but not in black and white? You know, is there something about that image that couldn't grab us in the way that those colour images from Apollo could? Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of, again, that broader cultural context of the moon. So sorry for that being a bit long-winded, but I thought there were a couple of interesting things to touch on there.
Oh, that's great. So as an astronomer, I can kind of explain why we use colours so much. When you see images now, they're coloured. Obviously, camera sees them black and white. They're just pixels. But then those who process the image decide to colour them a certain way. And for astronomers, colour has a meaning. It conveys information. So, you know, whether you want to show that something is hot and cold, whether you want to show that something is dark, you know, that it's kind of dug out or light. So there is a color is a way of communication. But my personal opinion is why the picture taken by human versus taken by robot was more impactful, because it followed by words of a human. And so the astronauts themselves have provided those words of the impact of them seeing that. If we had more developed robots then, they would have made some cool Twitter handles, and we would have treated the way we treat Curiosity now almost as a person. If that was available then, I think it would have been impactful as well. But I think we, as humans, and this is what arts show us all the time, we have feelings, and we respond to feelings. So if a picture sits there, we kind of go, okay. But if a human said, wow, this is amazing, look at that thin atmosphere sitting there, it's only that thin, we need to preserve this. I think that's much more powerful. That's my opinion.
I think that's so interesting. And yes, imagining what Twitter might have done for that interaction back then. But I think with that, Luna, and there was the AST photo as well, wasn't there? It's like we're learning to see this is like, these are views that people had speculated about and written about, but then we're learning a visual language of space we didn't have before, of seeing ourselves from the outside. And I think you're right, the colour makes an impact, as well as the idea that a person has taken this. But I think about this sometimes too, like classical Greek and Roman sculpture, which we see as that sort of beautiful, creamy white marble, so aesthetically pleasing and pure. And archaeologists know these statues are actually painted in incredibly garish colours, that to our sense of it, we think of that sort of classical aesthetic. And the colour has been stripped out of those and given us a sort of false impression of this culture, I suppose. So it's kind of a reverse thing, or is it the same thing? Those early photos were the stark grey tone kind of thing, which people are responding to less. It is kind of in reverse. And then you put the colour in, because it's also the same time, colour photography isn't... for people on Earth, you don't have colour cameras. This stuff was all there, but it's not... everything's not colour. People are watching black and white television, taking black and white photos. That whole colour vocabulary sort of isn't quite there yet, although it's around. So I'm not quite sure I'm going with the classical statue colour metaphor, but I think there's something there about how we perceive things and how things appear in black and white as well.
The voice there of Alice Gorman, archaeologist at Flinders University in Adelaide, and she's just had an asteroid named after her, as we told you earlier in the show. We'll have more from this lunar environment question and answer session at Federation Square on the Deakin Edge there on a later space show.